Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Chimps and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to keep the same in second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to GRRM for his amazing novels, FFG for this fantastic game, Card Game DB for getting us a start, and you, our loyal listeners, for sticking through thick and thin. Check us out on our website, Facebook, or Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com and rate us on iTunes. This CC licensed music is Town Function by Spinoza.
Okay, guys, we're back with another installment of this series that I'm working on, where we're interviewing some different stores that have some involvement with the LCGs, so that we can kind of get a picture of how things stand for different folks in, I think, some fairly different segments of the hobby gaming store business. So this week I've actually got our local representative here with us. I've got Carl Morgan from Metagames Unlimited, where we have all of our events here in Springfield. So thought we would just kind of sit down and chit-chat here for a little bit. So Carl, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do here at the store?
I heard cats. I actually sort of, I think everybody that works at a game store tends to do a little bit of everything between event planning and running and ordering and selling. So I don't think you can work at a game store and just have one hat. You have to sort of be able to do everything. Otherwise, you won't know what's going on.
Yeah, there's so much stuff to keep on top of, games and things.
But no, we do, I think with our store too, as opposed to some, because a lot of times you'll see stores that are very magic oriented or just board games, and we try to do a little bit of everything. So we've got board games, we've got miniature games, we have role playing games, we have card games of all kinds. So you have to know a little bit about everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like you guys branch out a bit, but I mean, looking at the counter space here, would you say Magic is still a pretty solid bread and butter?
It's very odd to see stores that don't deal in Magic. So, but Magic is very bread and butter for pretty much everywhere. Although if they said tomorrow, hey, Magic's going away, it would suck, but we would survive because we've got other places to sort of branch into. So,
right. So what game then is your personal focus?
Well, I'm probably known more as a miniature gamer. I've been heavily involved. When I was younger, was involved playing various games. And then when War Machine and Hordes took off, that's sort of my prime game. And I'm known for that because I run a fairly large event for that on a nationwide level.
I mean, feel free to mention that.
It's called War Machine Weekend. Yeah, we pull in about 500 to 600 people a year. It's up in St. Louis. So,
and they're all playing?
Yeah. They're playing or doing something. Painting, role playing. There's all kinds of different stuff going on.
Gotcha. But, I didn't know how many were specifically playing in a tournament.
Usually I would say they're, of all those people, you're looking at 75 to 80% of the people playing at once.
Jeez.
But there's, seminars and classes and that kind of thing going on too.
So it's a whole con experience.
Yeah. It's a con experience for one particular game.
Gotcha. Cool.
But I do a lot of miniature gaming is my sort of focus personally. Just cause I like the building and the playing and the painting and like all the aspects of the hobby as opposed to just playing. I think that's one of the reasons I played a lot of card games getting into gaming in the middle part of my years in college. I was did a lot of card gaming, but miniature gaming, once I got into that, that really held my attention more than anything else. Cause I feel like I become more invested in the game by the hobby aspect of it. By being painting a model makes me more interested in it. And I like the art side of it. So there's that. Gotcha.
Okay, cool. So how'd you get in, on some of the Game of Thrones stuff then?
Thrones. I had a friend, Adam, who played in the TCG days.
Okay.
In fact, I cannot remember the life of me. The set was at Gen Con the year the set came out, and it was a Greyjoy centric set because I was sort of interested in that because I sort of gotcha. Knew about the books. He had told me about that, and I was like, oh, these Greyjoy people seem sort of cool.
They might have previewed that, the same Gen Con the game debuted because the first expansion set, the second set of the game, was called Sea of Storms and added the Greyjoys.
That actually was it.
Yeah.
Now that you mentioned that. Because I still have to this day, I've got my granite Greyjoy house card that they gave me. I basically went there and they made me a deal. It was, I mean, Fantasy Flight was such a different booth back then than it is now that I went up there and they sort of told me about the game, and Adam kept trying to get me into it because he was a fan of the books. And so I bought a bunch of booster packs, and they made me a deal on some Greyjoy power counters and the granite house guard. So, and I like I said, I still have those to this day.
Nice.
Even though I don't get to play as much as I would sort of like. And then after that, it was just, you know, working with the store and being in and out of it. So, and when they launched the LCG, that sort of was the big resurgence for that, you know, in our area.
Yeah. I mean, speaking of this area, I wasn't over here in Springfield during the CCG, really. Did Metagames mess with it or have
a
much
little
of
a bit? It was
then?
It was stuff we sort of messed around with a little bit, but it was more of on the periphery. It wasn't anything that we held events for on a regular basis. It was something that I wish I had a game right now that I could compare it to, because there's just not as many CCGs now as there used to be.
Yeah,
but it was something that, like, back in those days, I don't even know if people were still playing the Decipher Star Wars game or even that was still around. I think back in that day, Magic was still number one. Pokemon was up there, but there was people playing like Dragon Ball, and we had a big Lord of the Rings, Decipher Lord of the Rings community. Yeah. So it was definitely,
a couple years
definitely on the periphery. So, not one that I don't think we ever really focused on a ton. I just remember that, being interested in the story and then Adam get me into the game, but I know that we carried some of it, but not real heavily.
Gotcha. Well, I know I started coming up here after the kind of LCG shift, and things had kind of already started to pick up with some local folks here and whatnot. What kind of got metagames into things deeper with the LCG shift?
Well, Greg, one of our local players, I'm sure Greg Atkinson, he actually roomed with us at Gen Con. He was wanting to come with us, so he roomed with us at Gen Con because he was playing in Worlds.
Oh, was that?
Or
were you who he roomed with the year he won?
The year he won, because we're like, he was up brewing decks all night long, and we thought he was crazy, A, for staying up all night and working on these decks, and two, when he was telling us, like, I distinctly remember, I think that was the year he won with a deck that was bigger than 60 cards.
Yeah, it was like 73 or something weird.
Being around people who play a lot of Magic, we thought he was insane. We thought that was the dumbest thing ever. and we're like, well, this will be easy. He'll be out before. And then he comes back and goes, oh, yeah, I won. We're like, all right, cool. So, no, that was, I mean, we had locals. I mean, obviously we knew Greg and we would order stuff for Greg. And, but yeah, he roomed us with us that year and then won. And then we, I don't know. It really, like, it feels like the game sort of came out of nowhere. Once they started we carried it a little bit, but once they really started the LCG, that's when we decided that's when we're as a store, we're going to do more with it.
Right.
And try to really get more involved, because it was a at the time we thought it was a much better model for what they were doing. I think personally the jury's still out on that.
That was something I definitely wanted to hear more, especially as a store guy perspective. Now that we've made it through a relaunch as well, how's that format held up for you guys?
Well, we still have consistent sales, but the sales for that kind of stuff they don't come close to a TCG, and that's because the players chase the cards. It's what a TCG or collectible card game builds around itself. The LCG format is, I think, great for somebody who is interested but doesn't want to, like, but I'm not sure if it's the best thing to keep a game super healthy for a long period of time. And as much of a following as that has, I think that if they came out and said, like, Game of Thrones second edition was going to go back to a TCG format, it would probably be even more popular now than it is currently. Yeah. But that's just a theory of mine.
Especially with the kind of cultural cachet it has right now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, people are floored when they find out that it was, you know, like the TCG predated the TV show.
Yeah.
They didn't realize that it had been out since what, the early 2000s.
Like, 2002.
Yeah. Cause I think the year I bought into it was 3 or 4 at Gen Con. And people are like, they just didn't realize there was a thing before the TV shows, but, but it didn't really, it's not that far behind the launch of the books, which is pretty good foresight on Fantasy Flight's part to get, you know, to hitch their horse to that wagon.
Yeah. Depending on how that licensing agreement went, whether they've had to renegotiate it between then and now, I don't know. But I'm sure they got it for a pittance at the time.
Yeah, but like I think now, like, if they would have came out and said that, you know, at the second edition we're going to revert back to a collectible format, that there would have been some people that would have complained. But I think a collectible format makes for a healthier gaming community. Mm-hmm. And about, again, I have my own theories on how that.
That's literally what we're here to talk about.
So we sit here in the store and we've racked our brains trying to figure out better ways to get more people in to play living card games, but it's too easy. The format's too easy just to buy and then go home. So you buy your $15 pack and every month and a half when it comes out, and you go home and you may play at home and you may come in for an event, but there's a community that builds around a collectible card game like Magic. Magic builds a secondary community with a secondary market.
So the trading with each other.
The trading.
Browsing your singles.
We even see that now with the Star Wars Destiny, that's even becoming a thing, and it's snowballing. So where now as we've got people trading in cards and coming in to trade with each other, trading them to us, coming into tournaments to win store credit so they can buy that, you know, Han card that's a $50 card that they couldn't afford to buy, just, you know, they need that extra push, and so they can afford to pay $5 to get an entry fee in hopes to get, you know, 30, 40 in store credit back so they can afford to buy those expensive cards.
Yeah, so that's something I don't think we've talked about much on the show or with other people, how a secondary market can feed into organized play.
Yeah,
or organized play into secondary market.
It's not something that you're going to see probably written up like in a Wizards of the Coast memo or anywhere, but a healthy secondary market helps snowball a tournament or a game itself into a better tournament scene.
Yeah.
Just because you've got, and I'm sure you're going to have people out there, and I see the other side where people will be like, well, we like the living card game format, and at the core, I like it too, but I think it is for a game store and a community, it's healthier to have that other thing to sort of, you know, be the spark plug to keep the ball rolling when there's not tournaments.
Yeah. And now that you've got me thinking about it, I think there's even also something to be said for that kind of needing that fix. From the thing, like keeping it on people's minds, keeping them thinking about it, keeping them discussing it. Even if they're just looking for deals and prices on cards, they're thinking about it other than just that release day each month.
Especially when there are releases that aren't as steady. So, like, if there's a if there's a release of a certain chapter pack that should be out, but it doesn't come out for a month or two, there's a big gap where, you know, you have to fill that void with something. And if, and you know, if there's not a good secondary market, people aren't coming in and asking and looking. I just think it's of our experience, having that helps create an air of, I don't know, like it's a secondary community that feeds onto itself. Yeah. So it's a good thing. And like I said, I think Destiny has definitely shown that that's true. Cause now, you know, the only thing that's holding Destiny back right now is, you know, having product.
Yeah.
Like we got another big shipment in the other day. It's already all gone.
Had a hand in helping with that.
And, even though that's annoying, it shows that, you know, people are there and there's more people wanting to buy into it. And so it's just a matter of time. But once that gets worked out, then, you know, we'll really see how well it does. And I mentioned to you, I wouldn't be surprised they use that same model for other games coming down the pike.
Now that I've had the chance to really read through the rules and look at a bunch of cards and stuff, too easy to adapt that to some of the other licenses that they have.
Yeah.
Or in-house IP they've got.
Oh, definitely. No, it'll you'll see other stuff for that down the road, I'm sure. But no, like I like at the core, I like the LCG format, and even with a game like the new Arkham Horror game, that's a co-op game, not the competitive game necessarily that, you know, like Thrones or Netrunner is. I'm sort of surprised they haven't, I'm surprised they're just still doing sort of the chapter pack, model with that, because to me, it feels like that and like Lord of the Rings even should have been released in just like big box releases so it can be marketed more with like the board game.
Yeah. I think they've switched that up some with Arkham.
It's a little bit, but there's still a number of packs out. And yeah. I think if they would just say, hey, we're doing the, you know, here's the main starter and here's some $30 packs and they're all stuff you could put on a shelf with board games, I think it would get a bigger community.
Yeah.
In fact, I think Lord of the Rings would still be going strong if it was marketed more like that.
Weirdly, everything that I hear, I just say weird just because I can't find other people locally that admit to playing Lord of the Rings hardly. But everything I hear is that it sells very well for FFG.
I think it's not like it's a bad game. It's a good game. Locally, we find that the people who are interested in that are the board game players and they didn't want to keep up with the chapter pack releases. Yeah. And I know that they've switched that somewhat now, I think, where it's more
especially big box. Yeah, if folks want to follow like the main story of the Lord of the Rings, they did just big boxes to do that.
But the smaller packs, the people didn't really want to keep up with that. So at least locally for us, we still special order some stuff, but we don't like stock it on a regular basis like we do the other stuff. So
I probably ought to have you special order some of that for me, come to think of it. I'm behind.
But like Thrones and Netrunner are the two healthiest ones because they have a community, and Netrunner, you know, is still going strong and Thrones is still doing well. So those two are fine. It was just if I just keep thinking in the back of my head, like, man, if they had, you know, like even like chase cards or something. I was even surprised that they didn't introduce some sort of like chase card mechanic within a chapter pack. So there would, you know, like get trading involved other than just like, say, the OP kits.
Yeah. I'd been thinking about that sort of thing. And it was something I was going to ask you, especially in regards to that secondary market, is what you thought that would kind of do to things. If either each chapter pack had a chance at a foil or an alternate art or something, same game text, no changes there to still kind of keep that spirit, or the draft packs.
I thought they missed the mark on the draft packs, that the two things on when they did the Thrones draft packs and the Netrunner draft packs that they should have done is A, make them the same quality as the regular cards, and B, if not all, make some of them alternate art cards. That way it would get people to want to buy and then would want to draft on top of that. Like with Netrunner, for example, we had people who said, I'm not bothered drafting. I'm just going to buy an extra set so I can make a cube. And then they would draft the cube because they had the cards already. They didn't care so much about buying the draft packs. And so there needed to be something extra to drive those sales and make people want to draft.
Yeah.
And I think that something like that would help.
That's tough when it's all just cards that people already have.
And that's the thing, is they already have them all. So there's no reason to get into it. So people look at it as like, I'm buying the stuff purely just to do a draft. And if I want to do that, I can use my own collection to do it already.
Yeah.
And that's harder to get people to want to do that. So you've got to give them that little push, at least in my mind.
Right. Right. with something like that, do you think that just like an alt art would stand up enough? When you're looking at something like Magic or Destiny, now that I had the chance to really get into it, and you're looking at kind of must play stuff at those higher rarity levels, like, do you think just alt art or kind of promo things will hold attention?
I mean, let's look at Magic. Magic right now, you get people playing Commander.
Yeah.
You get people playing Legacy who go out of their way to find ways to tweak their deck just on the looks of it. So you'll have people that want the Japanese foil. You have people who want, you know, the masterpiece cards that are in the last few sets for Magic.
Oh, yeah.
And they're willing to pay $100 for a $10 card. So I don't think it's out of that realm of the out of the realm of possibilities for to think that, like, oh, I'm playing Greyjoy. I want this really cool Asha card I want the foil alternate art version that I can get in the draft pack. Because in Thrones, you don't always need as many. So, like, shelling out extra for one or two when then maybe that's all you play in a deck is not nearly as bad as, you know, trying to get a place at a four for Magic.
Right.
So I think that there would be more people wanting that, especially if it's like you play one of and it's a character you really like and people are drawn to Thrones because they like the characters and they like the houses and they're, you know, they have a, you know, weird bond. But I mean, that's something I think is one of the strengths of Thrones is
and
people
something they could play up more.
Yeah, people have these bonds with House. They like playing Stark. They like playing Lannister. They become to identify with it. So
yeah,
there's ways to strengthen that through collectible things they could make, and not just tournament prizes, but inserts here and there. And I think it's something they could do if they wanted to, but not. I know that that would probably irritate a large section of people who did it, but if you made it as an add-on so it's not something you had to have, but it was just something like a bonus, I think it would be.
Yeah. Hard. So like no different game text or
exactly.
Anything.
No, you don't want to do that, but I think just and make it to where it's like, oh, I got my 60 card pack, my chapter pack. Well, we're going to make it 61 cards and we're going to randomly throw in a foil of something or, and then that way they've got that one card they can go trade. And over time they build up this little collection of alternate art cards and maybe, you know, you get the good one.
Right.
And so I think it's definitely a way to add that collectible nature and start heading toward a secondary market, even for games that are already in stock.
Yeah. And that's kind of leads to what I was wondering then as a store then. Saying they hypothetically did that, do you think that you guys would bother with busting any packs to try to build an inventory of all cards like that, and then thus have the plain Jane? We're going to use common in air quotes.
I don't think so because you have to look at the risk reward, and if it was a one off. Probably not. If there was more than that, then you just have to run the numbers. Like, if it was just one card, it's too much of a risk. Because you literally have 60 cards, you were going to have a hard time selling.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was wondering
about. People that'd be like, oh, I wanted to buy this pack, but I only need this one card. So they might come by three of a card, but those, it's going to be pretty rare.
Yeah.
Like I think I've looked into a number of times trying to figure out if a singles market for Thrones or Netrunner or something like that would be viable. And I think for a typical store, it's just not real doable.
Yeah.
I think most people, you know, instead of paying $5 even for a playset of cards or $3 or $4, they'd rather just pay the $15 and get everything that's in the chapter pack, whether they use it or not. So,
yeah, that's fair. Well, okay. I'm still kind of enjoying exploring this collectability angle. Well, and how that kind of lines up with some of the organized play and such. Because we've been talking kind of a lot about the kind of big dogs at the moment. Magic has continued to be. Destiny is kind of the new up and comer at the moment.
Yeah, for sure.
But what about how like an LCG like Thrones is kind of stacking up in these sort of metrics versus some of the kind of outliers of collectible games at the moment? Like I feel like Dice Masters has dropped off pretty heavily, or something like Hero Clicks. I mean, granted, they're not strictly card games the same way, but they do have.
I mean, if we start thinking about all the quote unquote collectible games out there, you've got like top down, it's probably Magic, Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, Destiny, and not necessarily in this order. Magic's definitely number one. Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh are right up there. Heroclix is also up there. But with Heroclix, we don't even do singles for that just because it's, again, the risk reward.
You used to, didn't you?
We used to, but the space it takes, the amount of space it takes and the amount of return you get is real chancy. So we have to think about that, you know, when we have a limited amount of case space, when we moved to our new store and we actually pared down the number of showcases we had, that was one of the things that got cut. Although, you know, I say that and then like, you know, a couple weeks ago, we made room for Destiny because we saw that there was going to be a market there and the market's a little easier to manage than say the Heroclix market. So
yeah,
we wanted to get in on the forefront of that with our players and make sure we were known for being a place to come get singles. So.
Yeah.
But I think with all that, like you look at them, I can't think of anything else. The Dice Masters, I know there's pockets of people that play, but even the collectible nature of that like wasn't ever big enough for us to be able to, you know, say, yeah, we're going to jump into that because it's that one is super hit and miss with when you've got 90 packs in a box and one card maybe the legendary card or, you know, the harder one to get, like like the amount of cards out of a box aren't enough to make you want to bust and be able to buy, sell and trade. It's very limited. Pokemon's the same way, but Pokemon is interesting because of how they market the packs and that they actually have I found that they've had a really neat, way that they've done their packs because Pokemon, you've created a market of, you've got maybe out of a set, you might have 5 to 10% of the cards that the collectible or the real competitive players want.
Gotcha.
But the kids want the rest of them. So opening and busting packs for that isn't too bad because you're still making a lot of your money back because kids don't have a problem forking out a quarter apiece for even just the crap cards because they don't care about the playing. They just want the different cards.
Bulbasaur or whatever.
And so they have that sort of throws the whole collectible thing on a skew. I mean, as an example, we, magic cards, when people bring in and buy and sell magic cards with us, we give $1,000 per common and uncommon, just bulk cards.
Gotcha.
With Pokemon, we haven't really gotten big into the Pokemon singles yet. That may be something that we get back into, but like, I know right now on a national level, it's not uncommon to get $50 to $70 for 1,000 bulk cards, which is completely different. Like when people were telling us this, we're just like floored, but it's because they've got two different markets within one pack that you're selling to. You've got the little kids buying just everything. And then you got the competitive players buying a smaller percentage, but paying a higher margin for it.
Right.
So it's interesting. But no, you've got to, and that's the other thing with the collectible. You've got to have a really good knowledge of all that stuff, because like we really don't do much Yu-Gi-Oh singles because we don't have many staff on staff that knows that, because that's a market that, because of the way they produce those cards, you'll have a super rare Yu-Gi-Oh card that's worth a couple $100s. And then they'll go, oh yeah, by the way, we're reprinting that as a common in a starter deck.
Whoa.
And it'll kill the value. And you have to have people that are on top of that and know it. So it's a matter of, you know, keeping up with a lot of information. It's very much like playing the stock market. And if you can't process and keep up all that information on a regular basis, you're not going to do well with it. So it's harder. It's on a store level, it's a little harder to do, but it's something that comes second nature to a lot of people that have been in the industry for a while. So
gotcha.
I don't even know what the original question was. I just went off on a tangent.
No, that's fine. It was about the kind of more sidelined collectible game, so to speak. And I guess maybe I didn't fully express what I was thinking about there, about how kind of the community and player base you see here for those type of games kind of lines up with what you're seeing for Thrones. Like, because you were talking about how that secondary market you feel helps push organized play for something like Magic.
So Thrones as a game, you see a fairly consistent player base. The same people buy a lot of same packs, and you see a fluctuation in and out of new people here and there buying stuff. But it's pretty consistent. Whereas with collectible stuff, you still have a consistent, but you have a lot more people are willing to try it. It seems like because they know that they have a secondary market that they can always sell their stuff back.
Gotcha.
And they can, so it's like, oh, I'm going to get out of this game. All right. Well, I may not get the $200 I spent on these boxes back, but maybe I'll get $50. So people are willing to give it a chance for that.
Hence that kind of balloon effect when new stuff launches.
Yeah. And, so that helps. And I think it helps, you know, people have that in the back of their mind. They may not think that when they get into a game, but they've heard about the Black Lotus, and they know that the people who had that back then, you know, have a card that's a $15,000 to $20,000 card now. Now, is that ever going to happen again? Hard to say, but it definitely helps spur sales. And even like now with Magic, like you've got the inventions or the masterpiece cards that they've introduced, which are these, you get one, and the average is one in every four boxes you'll get one. Oof. So even like the really cheap ones in this new set out of the gate are selling for $7,200. So you got that lottery ticket aspect. And because of that, you have a lot of people that are willing to jump in and try it, where, you know, with an LCG, Thrones, and Netrunner, you have a fairly consistent player base, and you'll have people get into it, you know, on a fairly consistent level, and people get out of it. So you don't see a big spike in, like, the last big spike was when the second edition came out, because people were like, all right, it's fresh, I can try it out.
Right.
And now it's more like you either a friend showed me the game and I want to get into it, and then there's a big spike in sales. But it's not like, you know, the percentage wise, you know, like this next cycle, we're going to sell, you know, 100% more than what we had last time because of the way it was, you know, whatever reason. It's going to go up and down, you know, 10%, 20% maybe, you know, if it's good or bad.
Right.
But it's not like you're seeing big spikes in sales on it. So I don't know. And even with Magic, I guess we don't see tons of spikes in sales or drops in it. It's just because you've always got people who like the opening packs, and like you said, they got to get that fix. And so with all the collectible stuff, you're always going to have that part of it, even on like Yu-Gi-Oh and Pokemon. Like, kids will come in, and a lot of times they don't care what they're buying, they just want a pack to open.
Gotcha.
And you just don't have that in Thrones, but that's just the way it's marketed, and that's fine. It's marketed to a different crowd. It's just, you got to know that going in.
Yeah.
It makes it harder to create that community, though, that I've talked about. Like, you want those community of people who are playing on a regular basis, and it's a little bit harder to to get those unless that is something you are doing all the time. And then with a typical game store, it's something they do, but it's probably not something they focus on. I think
the well, the return's just a lot lower for you.
Yeah. Guys, right? So you've got to focus on what you're, and like with us, you know, Magic, obviously the market is set by our local players, sets online sales, but like, because it's a singles market primarily, your margins are a little more robust. So, you know, buying a card for $2 or $3 and selling it for $10 is better than, you know, buying a chapter pack and, you know, making your normal markup on it.
Right.
It's just overall, if you know what you're doing, the margins are better on a secondary market too. And it does help.
Yeah.
When it helps smooth it over if you have a bad set.
It makes sense. I don't think it's any real surprise to most folks that, you know, the way distribution and whatnot, wholesale works, you guys, your markup is probably in the realm. I'm not going to pin you down on percentages, but in the realm of 50%.
Yeah.
An idea from there.
I think everybody, you know, you're looking at that 50-ish to 40-ish,
yeah,
depending on who, you know, what you do. And better for some, worse for others,
right,
based on the size of your store and what you move per year, because that's usually how all that works.
Yep.
When you can set the market yourself and buy and sell, and then if you luck out and you have a bunch of cards that spike because of whatever happens, then it's a bonus. But at the same time, like the other day, Magic came out and said, oh, by the way, we're banning these cards in Standard.
Right.
Or banning these cards, period. And there was Standard and Modern and other cards. And a lot of those prices dropped. And so you have like these $10, $15, $20 cards that are now $2, $3 cards. So that's just part of the deal. But that's what you pay good help for, I guess, at the store, to make sure that they stay on top of that kind of stuff.
Well, aside from specifically the kind of collectability stuff, is there anything that you've kind of kicked around kind of on a wish list that FFG could or would do to kind of help you guys out, particularly, you know, with our audience on like the organized play front to kind of beef up that aspect?
I think with organized play from them, I think my biggest frustration right now is that we have to order – they want us to order organized play kits sometimes as far as 6 months out. Like, we had to put in numbers for Destiny before we even knew really much about the game.
Oh, wow.
And so it was a crapshoot. So this first wave of Destiny, we're probably not going to have enough organized play kits. Whereas, I would like to see them do something more like Wizards of the Coast, where you have a Friday night, you know, like they have a Friday night Magic kit. If you sell so much or you run so many events and it gets reported and you do all this stuff, then they just send you promo cards. And that's it. Just you get promo cards to give out. And that's just a little bonus.
And you don't have to keep signing up.
You don't have to keep signing up. You don't have to keep track of it. We run the events. We make sure we report them correctly. And then that's that. But I think that they could do something like that, because since a lot of their games, whether it be Destiny or whether it's Game of Thrones, they're card driven. So having those alternate art promos, which is effectively all the wizard stuff is, foils, that kind of thing, you could easily do that. And it's not like they send tons of them. You get like enough for so many weeks, so many events. And, you know, each event has like four to eight for the event. So, you know, they could send out a pack and say, all right, here's your 30 for the month, give them out for the events. But it would be nice to see the organized play kits be for like a month as opposed to like an event. And I know that there are places that sort of, you know, make them last longer, and you can do that. But I think having a more robust, local, like everybody seems to like the store championship, the regional championship, that kind of thing.
Oh, the kind of pyramid they
like
structure.
They like the sort of big events. And like, I would like to see more things like like that brought to like on a weekly level, not necessarily the prizes, but maybe just it. FFG, they seem to be very game first, organized play second.
Yeah.
And I think it needs to be more integrated than that, but they're mainly a, like, and we can talk about their LCGs and we can talk about their collectible games, but they're mainly a board game company. And so it is a secondary thing. But if I think that they need to figure out how to intertwine the two more, like make organized play and their collectible / LCG things become more one, make them feed off one another so they know what's going on, and maybe make a tournament system that works better, and maybe make a thing, you know, make reporting and getting events easier. Just like let's,
and that would make it easier on their end to know what stores are actually running. Cause even with the store championships, as I understand it, anybody that wants to could sign up for those, and those
get skewed a little too, because like even for our store championships, we have a lot of people come in from out of town.
Right.
And it would be nice. I'm sure they would like to know what actually gets played on a weekly basis. Cause I know when I did the, application for, the regionals, for example, they want you to list like what were your last events and how many people showed up. Well, you know what? I don't have, because we might do them by hand because there's no software. Well, if there was a software system, I could go through and just call up and go, here, I'm just going to send you the reports, or they should have them already because we've uploaded them to. Now, again, comparing to the DCI is tough because they built this from the ground up with their game. And it's harder to say, oh, you should do that because that's a whole, you know, infrastructure that they just don't have.
Yeah.
But I think if it was more integrated, that they could be like, oh, well, you know, maybe they run some special events and see that, like, how our numbers spiked when we tried this, or our numbers dipped when we did this, they would have a better feel for it. Cause right now it's just like, the kits are great. And it's like, but here we can sell anybody the kit and, you know, we can run events with them, or, you know, I can look on eBay and see all the people selling them and people can get them that way. So it's not like it's, the stuff is hard to get. I mean, other than like the special stuff in each one. So like, I know there's a big secondary market for like the Star Wars acrylics.
Yeah.
And so like that alone should be showing them, hey, there's a secondary market for something. You guys could help normalize that to make the stores better. And then it would also make your events better. Maybe bring some more people in if that was something that you integrated within your organized play a little bit better,
a little more robust instead of just kind of a little, little bits and pieces. Yeah.
And, but how they do it, you know, it's hard to say without them, especially now with the merging with Asmodee, they're even more of a board game company. So, what do you say other than just be like, all right, we're just going to take what they give us and just do the best we can with it. But if they want it to be more of a thing, they're going to have to be willing to step up and help us out some more. So,
cool. Well, Carl, thanks for taking some time out to chat with me about this. No, I actually think we were in a little longer than the half hour I was originally shooting for. So thanks for taking some time out of your day here at work to do this.
Not a problem.
All right, listeners, we'll check back with you next week.